Morning, Gamecock fans. Today's Friday, March 6th, the year of our Lord 2026, 3626. Welcome to Coffee with JC Sherbert. Hope you're all doing well and have had a fantastic week. All things considered, with all that's going on with Gamecock Athletics right now, I think we've had a pretty good week as far as just getting through it. Unfortunate news with the passing of Lou Holtz. Losses are piling up. Disappointing senior night in many ways in men's basketball. The future is up in the air. You have the baseball situation. I don't know that, you know, the Charleston Southern game or the Upstate game gave any of us a whole lot of confidence about what's going on at the plate. Go read David Cloninger's article in his new free newsletter at the Charleston Post Courier and his other article. If you're a subscriber there, listen to the interview that we had with him earlier this week. It's on our YouTube channel. You'll get the picture of all that good stuff. But another weekend is upon us. A little bit different schedule today here on the Chief Sports Network. Jamie Bradford had a family obligation, so he's taking the day off. So there will be no morning show. And I know a lot of you will miss the conversation with him and Stuart Lake, but conference play starts next week, so that'll take place next week. But we do have lots of programming. Four Quarter Friday, Rob and Matt and Steve have been at the Colonial Life Arena. I wonder if it didn't seem like it from the pictures, but maybe there's a little more people at some of those state championship games than was at the senior night game the other night. I don't know that for sure, so I don't want to talk out of my patoot, but anyway, they're having a good time. State championship games at the Colonial Life Arena, obviously. You can follow them on Twitter at or X at the number 4 Quarter Friday. Lots of good stuff there. Go to their YouTube channel and hit subscribe. It's at 4 Quarter Friday spelled out. We'll have some stuff there. That's where they'll be streaming today. Also on the Inside the Gamecocks channel as well, starting at 8:30. Matt Smith, Rob Williams, and Steve Hall. Lots of state championship basketball talk. JC and Morgan, myself and Mike Morgan, a little college football fix. Mike's been on the road for college basketball. I think he told me 26 out of the last 27 days, so he's back. So it'll be good to get a JC and Morgan in. This time of year, that show, we make an attempt, but with him basketball season and his travel, that's his busy time. And so we're getting back to it today. That starts at 9:15. So they'll kind of be running simultaneously. Then at 11, Inside the Gamecocks, the show with myself, Matt Anderson, the late night Gamecock, and Mad Dog Phil Mullinax, 11 to 1 today, just to give you your Gamecock fix. Carolina softball, Ashley Chastain Woodard and her crew play the Texas Longhorns tonight at 6. Big SEC opening series for those ladies. Longhorns are pretty good. They're third in the country. First pitch is at 6 from Beckham Field, SEC Network Plus. The baseball team doesn't play today. They have a doubleheader tomorrow, starting at 1 with Princeton. Princeton's 15th in the RPI. Last time I checked, the Gamecocks are actually 19th. So they're in striking distance. It makes it even more frustrating with, yeah, some of the things, but 1 o'clock is first pitch for game one for Founders Park, 4:30 for game two, the Princeton Tigers, and then they'll play Sunday. So a chance to beat a team that's pretty good. I mean, they're 2-5, but they played four games at Duke, won one of them, which is good for an Ivy League team. And then they played three at NC State to open the season and won one of those too. So NC State and Duke, as we know, are not they're not pushovers. They're really good ACC baseball teams. So they're going to come in and give Carolina probably some problems this weekend. So that should be a good series. And the Gamecocks go down to Citadel and then head on down to Florida to open SEC play next weekend in Gainesville. So that's what's going on in Gamecock country, right? Don't forget InsideTheGamecocks.com. You can go sign up for our newsletter. We'll have a softball insider report today from Jamie Bradford and then the regular newsletter. So look for that. We usually put it on our X account as well, at Gamecock Show. where you can link access and then hit the subscribe button. So be sure to follow us on X as well. All right. So what I want to talk about today, it's not going to be a very long episode because I've got a lot to get to myself today with JC and Morgan and the show coming up later. But when I was thinking about Coach Holtz and just sort of his era, and remembering back to that 2000 season, which I explained yesterday, means a lot to me personally. And just had a blast that year. It was one of the greatest Carolina football seasons, almost like a relief, you know. And that was really, folks, the last time things had been kind of bad across the board. You know, not this bad, not this bad, not even close, you know, at least in 98, 99. You had a baseball season in 99 that where Carolina won the East for somehow some reason didn't get in the tournament. I think strength of schedule. Mike Morgan says they didn't deserve to be in. I don't know. They were 35-23, won the division, did not get into a 64-team field that year. I'm sure it was close, but they just got left out, right? So let's just say that. So that was the peanut on top of the turd sundae, if to use a gross analogy here in the morning. But it you know that was not a good year at all. And then the following football season was 0-11. Following basketball season, I think they had a losing record. They were, I think, 15-17. Made some noise in the SEC tournament. That was that team with like Chuck Edson was a lot of young talent on that team. For Eddie Fogler and those guys, Marius Petrovicius, Tony Kitchings, those guys ended up playing for Fogler and Odom, and you know, kind of split those two tenures. But basketball was a losing season too the following year, 99-2000, and then it kind of turned. You know, it turned because it was that 2000 baseball team was ranked number one in the country, number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament. They were 50-6. I mean, they were rocking. That was a great year. Lost in the Supers. Then the following football season, and that's kind of the point here, Lou Holtz turned it around. The Gamecocks snapped a 21-game losing streak. The next week, they beat Georgia. They beat New Mexico State in the opener, beat Georgia, ruined Quincy Carter's Heisman campaign. He was the quarterback there at the time. Georgia was fifth in the country. He threw five interceptions that day. Derek Watson, late touchdown run, and that team, you know, they lost some games. Sure, they lost some tough ones. Tennessee and Clemson loss especially was tough, and even the Florida loss, because had they won that, they would have won the East and gone to Atlanta. They were up 21-3, and the old head ball coach just kind of figured it out and started scoring. And I remember Carolina blocked two punts in that game at the end. I mean, at the beginning, they were 21-3 and two block punts for touchdowns. And then, you know, Carolina's defense, gosh, Rashad Faison dropped a pick six. It would have been 28-3. But I remember in that ball game, just to show you know, kind of how things went for Spurrier sometimes, we saw it at Carolina. Little did we know at the time, you know, they'd gotten the punts blocked. And he said he looked at his special teams coordinator and said, just run that thing where you're running around the end. Just run that, run around the end. So they ran a fake punt, and that got the Gators going. And then I'll never forget this. I think they had already scored, and it was 21-10. So this made it 21-17. They threw a pass, and it went off. There was a downfield receiver, and it went off his head, and one of their receivers caught it. And I think he may have scored a touchdown. But just sometimes when you played in the swamp against Spurrier's teams back in the day, things just, even when things are going right, you were just right around the corner from things being going horribly wrong in bunches. That's actually happened to Carolina a couple of times, no matter who the coach has been down at the swamp. So that was disappointing. Those were three of the losses. The Alabama loss was disappointing because Alabama was 3-8 football team. So the four games they lost in that 8-4 season could have gone either way. Could have been a really good year. But at the time, it was the biggest turnaround in college football history. 8 wins. And so I did some research because what's Carolina football looking for in 2026, a big turnaround, right? And you kind of look and you see 4-8 last year, and is it possible? Well, there's some precedent in college football for this. There's a couple of SEC examples. SEC, it's more rare, so it's not going to be easy. And I'm not saying, if you turn it around 8 games, that's 12 wins. That's certainly a quite a turnaround. But I think that would make everyone happy. As far as the future after this year, they'll obviously there's speculation out there. There's going to be, Beamer's on just about every hot seat list there is, which is unfortunate. But I don't know what the minimum number. There were some questions out there on SEC Sunday night this week about minimum number of wins for Beamer to be safe, and those opinions kind of skewed a little high in my estimation. A lot just depends on how the season goes. Like last year, 2025, and you look at kind of the coaching staff and the style of play that he's gravitated toward now on offense, and it could end up being, as painful as it was, a blessing in disguise. But you look at that year, if they had gotten to 6 or 7 wins, considering how every other team on the schedule season played out, I don't think that would be, I mean, that would have been disappointing relative to expectations, don't get me wrong, but in the reality of things, that's perfectly acceptable season. I mean, that's going to happen. I went through LA, like LSU's only won double digit games like twice in the last 8 years or so. There's really good programs in the SEC that, when you talk about minimum number of wins, and maybe at Carolina we were a little skewed with it because Clemson's the rival. They're always, I mean, they've got, they didn't have a very good team, or I think they were talented, but they just didn't play. They were out of sync almost the whole year, not when they played Carolina, but Carolina was the one out of sync. Go figure. But I think because Clemson always has 7, 8 wins. They don't, when they dip, they don't dip that far. And nobody likes to talk about this, and I think I don't like to talk about it, but it's true. They don't have to play in the SEC. Period. End of story. End of discussion. Not that their schedule's not tougher some years than others, but it's they're not facing what South Carolina faces, so it's kind of an apples to oranges comparison. But so maybe we get a little skewed on number of wins around here. But I mean, there's very good programs in the league that have won national championships that, don't always get to double digit wins. So my point in saying all that is, against that schedule last year, 7 wins probably would have been a pretty good year in the grand scheme of things. Probably should have won the one at the end, speaking of Clemson, to solidify it. But I think that would have been perfectly acceptable. As far as next year goes, I think it's the same thing. I think same thing every year. What happens? I mean, are we in a world next year where Tennessee and Florida cycle back up? Tennessee's really, really good. They find an answer at quarterback. They're playing like they did in 2022. And John Summerall has a great first year at Florida and going to the Swamps tougher. Arkansas is a surprise. Mississippi State in year 300, Jeff Lebby is really good. I think we know Georgia's going to be good. A&M does not dip after losing both coordinators, really just one coordinator offense. That kind of thing. You just gotta look at it, and it will be what it'll be. Plus, there's 9 SEC games next year. So I don't know what the minimum number of wins and all that. That's not what this discussion really is. It's about, can they have a big year? Is there any precedent, or is it just that, well, 4 to 8 is a pretty good turnaround. Get to 8 with Lenora Sellers and Dylan Stewart, and move on from there. And it just all depends. Every game stands on its own. Every game's based on scenarios, and then it's about how the ball bounces. The question you always have in the off season is, number one, who's going to play, who's doing well in practice, and then number two, How do they match up? Are they talent wise in a position to compete? And then you just go from there. I mean, you answer those questions in the off season, and then the wins and stuff. It's fun to predict, and we'll all give predictions and stuff and all that. But it's it's kind of a week by week thing, especially nowadays, in this era that we're in. But so the precedent, because the 2000 team. That was the biggest turnaround in college football history at the time. Eight wins plus eight on the eight side. And since then, there have been plenty of teams that have done it. There's a lot of examples here. There were two in the playoff the first year that was a playoff. And that's Indiana that went from 3-9 to 11-2 in Kurt Cignetti's first year, and Arizona State that went from 3-9 to 11-2 and won the Big 12. Now, those two teams. We know Kurt Cignetti's a heck of a coach now, because the 25 Hoosiers were much better than the 24 Hoosiers, but they had a pretty favorable schedule. It broke their way. I think when you looked at their schedule going in, their tough games were Michigan at home. Michigan was average that year. They beat them by 5. Nebraska was supposed to provide some resistance. They beat them 56-7. The bottom fell out at Michigan State, Purdue, just about everywhere else. They did get beat by Ohio State, but then got in the playoff with an 11-1 record. Did not play for the championship. Arizona State started out a little slow, a little sluggish, and then got hot at the end with Sam Leavitt and ended up winning the Big 12 pretty convincingly under Kenny Dillingham. That was his second year. They were 3-9 the year before, and just a disaster of a season. And got to 11-3 and made the playoff, almost beat Texas. So forks up there. And that was kind of a portal thing. A lot of good players out of the portal. Of course, Sam Leavitt, the rent a quarterback. So that's happened recently in other conferences. And those paths that those two teams had obviously were not as likely, will not be as daunting as the Gamecocks. But again, you never know. I mean, look at Texas A&M last year. Texas A&M. Going into the season, a lot of the concern was, man, they've got a lot of good teams on their schedule because, people didn't think Auburn would continue to be down. People didn't think Florida would continue to be down. People had high expectations for the Gamecocks. Missouri, by the time they played them, Missouri didn't have a quarterback. That was a road game late in the year. So that's four games right there. Plus, their one loss at Texas where you're like, well, and then they played Notre Dame on the road. So some people were looking at A&M going, they have potentially six losses on the schedule. Well, a lot of those teams besides Notre Dame, and they got Notre Dame early while they were still working their way in with CJ Carr at quarterback, and their defense was broken for whatever reason and beat them by a point. And they got on a roll and went to the playoff. Was A&M at the end of the day really, really good? I don't know. Texas didn't make the playoff. Texas beat them pretty good. So I don't know. Miami held them to 3 points on their home field. Miami's really good, but ended up being really good, right? And so in the SEC, your schedule draw, not only when you get it, when you draw it, but when the reality gets there and everybody's portal class is in and stuff, that matters. That matters. So Indiana and Arizona State kind of got there different ways. 2011 Houston went from 5-7 to 13-1. That's a plus eight. The 05 UCF Knights, George O'Leary, I hope you remember that team because they were the team that Steve Spurrier beat in his first game as the coach at Carolina. And they ended up being a little better than people thought. I mean, Carolina got up early, a couple of touchdowns, and held on 24-15. And that team went from 0-11 to 8-5 at UCF. There's a pandemic example. Baylor was 2-7, then 12-2, so they improved 10 games. But pandemic to non-pandemic, that pandemic year was just weird. I don't know how applicable it is, but Dave Aranda did turn that around. Tulane in 2022, it's not a power conference, but went from 2-10 to 12-2 and beat Southern Cal in the Cotton Bowl. And so there's some kind of ancillary examples. Now, what I want to focus on, though, are the kind of relevant examples to me. And there's one in the SEC and one out of the Big 12 that I want to kind of, and this will give you hope, right? This is going to give you hope. I'll start with the Big 12 because the problems with these two teams the previous years were very similar, and they followed a similar path to fixing it. One with a head coaching change, one with a coordinator change. So Carolina did not change head coaches, but they changed offensive coordinators. Both of these are offensive coordinator changes. Both teams struggled to score the year before. Both teams kind of had antiquated, I don't want to say antiquated schemes, slower schemes, that kind of thing. And both teams opened it up and it fit their personnel. So I'll start with the 2014 TCU Horned Frogs. Gary Patterson in 2013, they were kind of scuffling a little bit. They were 4-8 in the Big 12. I think it was their second year in the Big 12, maybe their first. Coming over from, I guess, were they in the American Conference, Mountain West Conference before that? And 4-8 record. Here we got this new conference. We've been winning. We're a proud program. We're 4-8. They had some co-coordinators left over from like the Justin Fuente era, because Fuente was the OC, and then he went and took the Memphis job and would end up at Virginia Tech a couple of years later. And it was his system, which was a good system, served them well for a while, but they kind of had the co-coordinators and just ran the same old TCU offense. And in the Big 12, they ate that alive. They couldn't score. They were pretty good on defense. So Gary Patterson kind of said, "All right, well, we're a Texas school. Most of these teams in Texas run this wide open thing." Art and Kendall Briles were at Baylor at the time, by the way. Most Texas schools run these wide open offenses. Let's do it. So they hired Sonny Cumbie and Doug Meacham to be co-coordinators, and they went from 4-8 to 11-1, and were the co-champions of the Big 12, improved by 7 games. Now, that was the first year of the 4-team playoff. That season, I am convinced that. Because what happened in the Big 12 didn't have a championship game then, and TCU was tied with Baylor, the Browns were there at 11-1, and they were co-champions, and then you had Ohio State that was 11-1. I don't know that Ohio State even won their conference title, but then Ohio State snuck in as the 4 seed. They just, well, we can't decide between the two smaller brands, so we're just going to go with the bigger brand, and Ohio State won the national championship, so nobody really argued about it. But that TCU team played a really good Ole Miss team in the Peach Bowl that year, and I think beat them like 40-3. It was a hell of a team that Gary Patterson had at TCU. In fact, that was probably TCU's best team until the one that played for the national title under Sonny Dykes back in 22. So that was quite a turnaround. So how did it happen? Well, Gary Patterson said, "All right, well, I'm done doing this on offense and struggling and not scoring points, and so we're going to do it. Can I kind of do it how the teams that score do it?" And presto, voila, 7-game turnaround, TCU, and that really established that program as a contender in the Big 12, which they have been. They have a nice program out at TCU. So where Kendall Briles came from, right? But Kendall Briles was coaching Baylor. Baylor also went 11-1 that year. That was kind of more expected, but it was offense. It was, hey, we're gonna go in a different direction. We're gonna let our players go play. We're gonna be aggressive, modern tempo, all that good stuff. And the scoring increased. The defense under Gary Patterson was still good. They gave up more points, which if Carolina's offense is working as intended this year, the Gamecock defense probably will give up more points. Because when you're up and down, up and down, up and down, it kind of the game, you see it. You saw it at Alabama when Saban opened it up with Lane Kiffin and then others. Alabama wasn't holding teams to 3 points. I mean, they give up in the 20s. Still had a great defense, but that's just kind of how it goes. I'm sure there's a good explanation for it out there. But they gave up more points, but they were still really good on defense and ended up getting to a New Year's Six bowl. Had a really good case for the playoff. Only lost one game and 11-1 in the regular season, and then they won that Peach Bowl. So they finished 12-1. That's an 8-game expansion in the win total. So that was in the Big 12, JC. Nobody plays defense in that league. You've said it for years. I have. And that's true and accurate and all that. That's just an example of when a head coach says, "All right, we're done screwing around on offense. We're gonna go out here and we're gonna get serious about attacking, scoring points, letting our athletes go play." That can it works. It doesn't always work. Doesn't always work. I remember Auburn, and I got an Auburn example here in a second. I remember Auburn under Tuberville. It may have been the year he got fired. They were wanting him to, "You need to open up the offense, blah, blah." So he hired Tony Franklin, who's a really good play caller, air raid guy, old school air raid guy, Hal Mumme Tree. And I'll never forget, you looked at that Auburn team that year, and it was weird because they had signal guys on the sidelines, and they'd have an offensive lineman signaling in things with a headset on. It just looked odd, this big old offensive lineman with a headset and kind of anyway, but they didn't score much, and I think they went 5-7, and I think Tuberville got fired, if I'm not mistaken. So that blew up in his face, but that was Tommy Tuberville, and that's back when Auburn actually was just firing coaches left and right. They kind of hold on these days on the Plains, although they have a new one this year. So that. It doesn't, like I said, doesn't always work. I think that probably the expectation when Clemson let go of Brandon Streeter and hired Garrett Riley is that that would boost them. And we saw how that worked out. So it's not a given, but this is an example of how it can be beneficial. And I've seen it work more times than I've not seen it work. Right. And a lot depends on personnel, too. And this episode is not really, but we're going to get into, I'll talk personnel all off season. And that's really the key is your players. But just on the surface, if you're looking, if you're hunting for a big turnaround and want some precedent, there's that. The next great example is 2013. Now they made a head coaching change at Auburn that off season. Gene Chizik had won a national championship, and then in 2011, they were kind of just okay. Malzahn left to take the Arkansas State job. He made a bad hire in Scott Loeffler, and that was a disaster. That Auburn team that year went 0-8 in the SEC, 3-9 overall. I think they had one close game with LSU. I mean, it was sad. They just, kind of gave up. So they fired Chizik and they brought Malzahn back as the head coach. And they installed Malzahn's offense again. And they got a quarterback named Nick Marshall from junior college. And they had a good running back. And they had a pretty decent defense. And they had players on that roster, much like Carolina's got players on its roster. And, they lost to LSU earlier in the year. And then all of a sudden they caught fire and moved the ball pretty dangerously against everybody. They did have some good fortune, a tip pass for a touchdown against Georgia, and then the kick six against Alabama. But then the next thing you know, they blew out Missouri in the SEC championship game. If that had been Carolina, maybe Carolina would have won it, but it wasn't. It was Missouri. And they go to the Rose Bowl, and Jameis Winston with a threw a pass to Kelvin Benjamin, who was 6'7". Where only he could get it late in the game, and Florida State beat him in the Rose Bowl for the national title. But Auburn played for the national title and finished 12-2. They lost at LSU, won every other game, scored a bushel more points, were much more lethal offensively. Took them a little while to get it really going. But once it did, it was Auburn football as we knew it in the early 2010s. And just a tremendous season. Should have won the national title. I watched every down of that game. Auburn outplayed them in many, a great Florida State team in many ways. So, what happened? How did it happen? They were 0-8 in the SEC the year before. Well, they had a horrible plan on offense. And Malzahn got there and said, well, we're not going to do it that way anymore, obviously. We're going to do it my way. And at the time, Gus was still sort of cutting edge and stuff, and tough to stop when he had the right quarterback and personnel. Again, personnel, but there's that precedent. Your SEC examples on this list are basically Carolina in 2000 and Auburn in 2013. All right, JC. So, what can happen in the SEC that's not these two outliers in 25 years? Well, there's, I don't know. You got to look at the, you got to have hope somehow. I think the important thing is with the TCU and Auburn examples, both, is that how, well, they fixed their offense, which is something everybody's been asking for around here for a while. So now you get to see if you fix your offense, if it does get, because again, I think Kendall Briles in that system is a good fix. It's a proven system. It works, but the players have to go play, and there's all kinds of different factors with that. But same thing with TCU. They fixed their offense, had other pieces in place, good coaches, and got hot and won it. But the South Carolina example, I'll add this. Lou Holtz in 99, when he lost every game, Lou's thing was he called plays, called run plays. People don't realize that. He was never a coordinator, but as the head coach, he would, he had his thumb on the offense. He did it in 99. And then in 2000, South Carolina went more to that spread zone thing that Skip Holtz liked to run and ran a lot of tempo. They didn't score a ton of points in 2000, but they didn't score hardly any in 99, right? But they ran tempo and spread, and he did modernize that. So that was a factor there in that turnaround. Charlie Strong's defense was awfully good that year, but Carolina got enough offense is the point, and it was much better from an atrocious year before. And I think last year was probably the worst offense since then, if you kind of look at actually scoring points. So yeah, so there's that, right? You could even go to the Indiana turnaround, as good as their system is, and how they started scoring more when Cignetti got there. Now it's a first year head coach and all that in 2024, but Indiana ran that system, and they ended up doing them well. But so those are the examples from around the SEC. I'm sure that you could get into like stats. With coordinator hires and offenses have gotten better and stuff. I'm positive there's a lot of examples of those, but we're talking about wins, and that's the bottom line, right? We're talking about the bottom line, right? So how common is it to kind of improve in the SEC, given the bloodbath that it is? Well, let's just look at last year, okay? Who improved their win total? There's four teams that did. Ole Miss is kind of an outlier. They were 10-3 the year before, and went to 13-2, but two playoff wins. So they improved what? Two games in the regular season. They were better, and they actually did it by offense being really good with Trinidad Chambliss and Lane Kiffin, Charlie Weiss Jr., their receivers, their personnel. Offense was really good. And then their defense didn't take as big of a step back as people thought. I thought that the 2024 Ole Miss defense was elite, but the defense this past year had its moments. It wasn't the best, but it had its moments. So they improved by three. Texas A&M improved by three. We've talked about them. Second year of a coach, I thought that what they did on offense until the end was impressive. We found that out in the second half of the Carolina game, right? Colin Klein is now at Kansas State, his alma mater, as the head coach. Vanderbilt improved by three wins, but I think that was more of a confidence thing. I do think their offensive line was better year over year. and they had more playmakers and more talent. A lot like Indiana in the sense that I thought the 24 Commodores were good and tricky, but the 25 Commodores, I thought added some more dudes. How about that? They improved by three. Oklahoma improved by four. Now, that turnaround was more kind of more similar to the 2000 Gamecocks. There was all this talk about John Mateer and Arbuckle and the offense and all that. And it improved because it was atrocious the year before. I still wouldn't call it great, especially toward the end. But it was good enough to get them because their defense was so dominant, right? I don't know if that's going to happen at Carolina this year. I don't know if that's what Carolina's looking for. I think Carolina's looking for an offense that can put points on the board consistently and be quite good, given the talent that they have. And the defense taking a step forward as well. But Oklahoma improved the best of anybody by four wins, going from 6-7 to 10-3 and making the playoff. So Oklahoma had the biggest turnaround or improvement this past season. So there's your examples from last year. And a lot of it does have to do with offense and offense being better and being able to score points. You've seen it. You've seen it around the country. So there's hope. As far as what needs to happen for that hope to become reality, there's a long way to go. It's critical that a lot of the players Carolina brought in from the portal take it up a notch compared to where they were at their old school. And that's on both sides of the ball. It's critical that Lenore Sellers and Kendall Briles, I don't want to say on the same page because I think they're on the same page. It's critical that he gets in sync with the offense. It kind of becomes second nature to him. Very positive thing from Lenore Sellers this week on during his media availability was Kendall Briles is just more of a go play coordinator, right? I like that because clearly Lenore Sellers was thinking, trying to process a ton of stuff. And when you have a bad, that's why you see some disasters in the NFL sometimes. And again, there's those three letters. If a team's struggling to block up front, I saw it with Caleb Williams, his first year in Chicago, as a rookie. And that's why rookie quarterbacks don't play often or play well. It's processing. It's guys are coming at you so fast. It's chaotic. It's very difficult to do. That's why most college offenses are very simplistic and they're designed to be quarterback friendly, to where you're just letting your guy go play instead of, forcing him into like this scheme or whatever. And I thought, when I heard Lenore Sellers say that, it warmed my heart a bit. And he also mentioned getting into rhythm. Offense got out of rhythm last year. Well, Lenore Sellers, if you've noticed, when he's been at his best, has been in rhythm. I mentioned it during the season, the operational tempo of the offense. That's critical, getting in rhythm. He's a rhythm player. And so that's positive. Those are all intangible things that, they're not guaranteed to, have a win. They're not guaranteed to make you win on Saturdays. But I feel better about the chances if Lenore Sellers is in rhythm and he's just going and playing and there's not 15 million different things you have to think about than I would if there was advanced algebra or calculus. Processing wise, he can worry about that when he gets to the NFL. Like I've said many times, best quarterbacks in the NFL, very few of them came out of these complex pro style schemes that, coaches love to. I mean, I think coaches love them because they're cool. Coaches have been there and done that. So anyway, all right, don't forget the show, JC and Morgan, Four Quarter Friday coming up today inside the Gamecocks.com for our newsletter. Gamecock softball tonight at 6, doubleheader in baseball tomorrow. We're back to do it all again next week here on Coffee with JC Sherbert. That's it. I'm out. Holla.